Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to the last Roguecast of the year. We are under the gun a little bit because of crazy Christmas scheduling.
Yes. Christmas scheduling, vast, giant post-Christmas reorders.
Well, that's the Christmas scheduling. We usually would do our reorder on Monday, but Monday our distributor was closed, so we had a big game order to log in. We did get our comics, which is good. We didn't have to do a crazy Wednesday morning poll.
Yeah.
But we didn't get a chance to read everything necessarily. And we also just don't have a ton of news and don't have a ton of time to podcast. So this is going to be sort of an abbreviated podcast. We're just going to dive right into comics for the week of Wednesday, December 28th.
The key stuff. The stuff you need to know for this week.
Yes. And we'll be back next week with more general New Year's merriment.
Yeah.
Although that might also be a crazy week.
Yes, that's true.
But
we're going to try.
But this week we're just talking comics. We're going to jump right in. And
maybe next week maybe we'll do the board game thing, do a little bit of retrospective.
We might. I'm going to jump right into Spider-Woman is my pick this week, which I've picked a few other times. This is no big surprise. This is Spider-Woman number 14. It is the second issue of the new story arc with the new artist, Veronica Fish.
Oh, I forgot it had a new artist on it.
Mm-hmm.
How's she working it?
She's really good. And they did something pretty surprising in the last issue. I still don't want to spoil it, even though it's sort of the central thrust of this issue. But someone has died. And it has put Jessica and some of the others into a situation where it's a slightly darker read than it's been in the past. And it's got – because you have the great character stuff. There's some solid action.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of humor in the book when I was reading it more regularly.
It's still got a couple of humorous moments, but it's definitely tough to be lighter in tone. It's like Buffy. You know, when Buffy did those episodes where it was dark, there was still –
they clearly
humor.
Deliberately decided to change it up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know how long that will last, but it's a change that works. Like I say, it's kind of like Buffy. When Buffy did darker episodes, it still had the lightness and the fun and the characters that I liked. And same is true of Spider-Woman. And if you haven't been reading this book, there's another trade out this week. I believe that makes the third trade of the series. I really, really recommend it. This is one of my favorite books of the year, and this is no exception. So, Dave, what do you got?
All right, I have something something new from DC. It's called Supergirl, Being Super. And you will have to tell me, Randy, if you know what the format is on this, because this is like an oversized issue, and I don't know if it's a miniseries or an ongoing or what.
I believe it is a miniseries.
Okay, it makes sense if they did like three or four like this, because this is probably like a 40 to 50 page issue, I guess.
Yeah, it's what they used to call prestige format.
Yeah, it's got a spine on it. $5.99 is actually the price on it. That's actually pretty legit for something like this. You're getting a lot of content. I don't know if this is – I also don't know if this is in sync. It's not with the DC
– Rebirth?
Rebirth.
No, I believe this is sort of outside continuity, the same way Legend of Wonder Woman is.
Right. Yeah, that must be what it is. And, you know, I might in a way liken it to also sort of – those Earth One books.
Yeah. Well, this almost feels like maybe an outside directive where they were like, hey, let's maybe get some female creators to work on our female characters.
Yeah.
Because this is Mariko Tamaki and Joelle Jones.
Yep.
And in the same way that sort of Renee, oh man, I'm blanking on her name, who did Legend of Wonder Woman, was sort of a rarity to have an actual female writer working on the female characters, which is a good thing. But Mariko Tamaki has done a graphic novel series or a graphic novel. Oh man, I'm going to blank on that too.
It's like This One Summer.
Yeah. And she did that with her sister, I believe. And this is her writing with Joelle Jones on art.
Before I get into this, just real quick, what's This One Summer? What was that about?
It was about this one summer.
And
I don't know. Things happen. I haven't read it.
Is it a biographical thing though? Probably.
I think so. Yes.
Okay. So this has the feel of having been written maybe by somebody who does biographical or autobiographical comics. It's a character piece about a high school era Kara Danvers and her friends. And I feel like it's less a superhero book and more of a like I'm sure there's a better, more modern example, but something like My So-Called Life, that 90s TV show. With some superhero elements into it, or superpower elements. I'm not sure if this is going to be a costume kind of book at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's narrated from the perspective of her. She's a teen going through sort of normal teen stuff, but also...
It's her 16th birthday, and
right, that's sort of the catalyst for it. She somewhat introduces, you know, she introduces her friends through the thing. Her best friend Dolly is a sort of, I'm going to say, slightly chunky punk rock looking chick who was named Dolly because her parents wanted her to be a Dolly Parton country music star.
Okay.
And just to give you a sense of where the book's tone is, and that it's a little bit more progressive, the narration says goes on to say as she's taking her cap off and she's got like sort of short dyed purple hair. The narration goes, Dolly once told me her life started when she realized she was a badass dyke and not a country music legend, although you can probably be both. Anyway, so these characters feel a lot more real than you would expect in sort of a, you know, this is not a, hey, let's hurry and get the teen years done stuff. This is a, hey, let's zero in on the teen years. Beyond that, let's see, I'm trying to think. Nick, you read and enjoyed this, by the way, right?
I did. I was a huge fan of the art.
Oh, the art's amazing. I don't even know.
It's Joelle Jones. So she's worked with her husband, Jimmy Rich?
No, I don't think that's her husband.
No, it's not. Or worked with him before, I believe.
Well, she's right now she's working on Lady Killer.
Lady Killer, that's right.
You know what the detail reminded me of a little bit, at least on some level, is of actually J.H. Williams.
Okay.
There's like some hyper detail art, very expressive characters.
It also reminds me of some of Dustin Nguyen's stuff when he was doing Wildcats.
Yeah, I could see that. It's honestly some of the best art I've seen all year. The characters, and that's all I'm gonna say, all of 2016.
Wow.
The characters are hugely expressive. They're subtle. They don't react in like ridiculous over the top ways. If there's photo reference going on, it doesn't come through in it. But the characters feel as if somebody has done a lot of studying of naturalistic movements and things like that. Nick, did you get the vibe? You see her adoptive parents.
Yeah.
And is the dad kind of like conservative dad? Is that the vibe I was getting?
I don't know if I got that per se. He's kind of an odd duck.
Yeah, but... he's a bit of an oddball.
So are parents, is this like TV continuity? Are parents scientists?
No, yeah. It does not look like it at all.
Is her sister in it?
Nope.
Okay, so it's its own continuity thing.
Yeah, it is its own continuity thing. There is the rocket ship that she came in on is out in their the barn or whatever.
Yeah, I mean it's sort of along the same lines. Her ship crash landed on Earth and to a young couple found it.
I mean, it sounds more like the traditional Superman story. In fact, I don't think he's been mentioned. So in a weird way, it almost appropriates that. We talked about, Nick and I were talking about that it might, you know, you would think, oh, this is a little Smallville-ish. Except Smallville never had writing, I would say, on this caliber. I feel like the writing is what elevates it. It's sort of, this sounds weird, but it's culminating, aside from the, you know, various stuff with her friends. What's the event at the very end?
It's track meet.
Track meet, yeah. There's a big track meet going on, and oddly enough, that is sort of the center event.
Hmm.
It would be more as if this was a teen drama where something big was going down with that.
Would you recommend this to people who are liking the current Archie stuff?
Yes, absolutely. I think it'd be that it's right up that alley. It's a little less tongue-in-cheek than that, for sure.
Right, sure.
And decidedly more serious, but I think, yeah, that's the same crowd. And oddly enough, even to people who are just like, kind of like, I don't know, like those like biographical comics and stuff like that, I think it might be worth taking a shot. It's got some sweet moments.
At no point does she punch the parasite.
At no point does she punch the parasite. I will say, I'm not
if you know
sure
what I mean.
If the... you know what? This actually seems like the kind of comic that might show her punching the parasite in the way you're talking about. Maybe. that seems like something that could come up.
I don't think that's a euphemism. I don't think it is. It just sounds like one.
There is an action-y thing that occurs partway through it, and or like near the end. But the one thing I'm worried about is that this may be so kind of teen drama oriented that it will kind of lack any of that sort of. A little bit of that cliffhangeriness that superhero themed stuff does.
Right. It may be more of a bookstore kind of thing. It may be aimed more at that market.
It's possibly so, but definitely worth a look.
Okay.
Nick?
Well, sometimes you just want straight up superheroes punching supervillains. And this week's issue of Justice League vs. Suicide Squad completely filled that for me as the basically Justice League.
You like the first issue?
Yeah, I thought the first issue was good, but this one just basically has the squad going up against the League, and they sort of break it up and go one on one with the opponents. Which is just kind of
that's
fun.
A pretty classic thing. The old the series of face-offs between two big teams.
I mean, seeing like Killer Croc going up against Aquaman, a fun idea.
Or like Killer Croc-Woman.
Batman, Deadshot, which you know
we've seen before.
Superman versus Enchantress, which is kind of interesting.
Is this one of those cases where the team was picked to specifically to match up against them?
No,
because that sounds like a little bit like it is.
Killer Frost is going up against Cyborg.
I can see them all as being somebody like she freezes his gears and stuff. Killer Croc is all aquatic-y.
See, but this is something, Dave, that you're always talking about that a lot of writers miss is the coolness of the powers and the way that they interact.
Yeah,
right. It sounds like who wrote this?
This is Joshua Williamson.
So it sounds like Williamson sort of got that. Like, here's the cool thing. Let's mash these two characters up and see how that goes.
But makes it's sense. Also introducing this third team that is not really
the Suicide League, the Justice Squad.
No, they don't have a name. This is a team that's being put together by Maxwell Lord.
The big jerk-faced jerkers.
You could say that. And it's a mixture of random pretty big bads. You have, like, Lobo and Dr. Polaris, Johnny Sorrow from old JSA.
Okay.
Rustum from Suicide Squad.
Okay. Thought that guy was dead, but okay.
Maybe not in the Rebirth timeline.
And sort of a big one is who's the Emerald Eye of Ekrom?
The
Emerald Empress.
Emerald Empress.
She's a Legion of Superheroes bad guy, so.
But the Legion of Superheroes isn't around.
But there are some stuff in here that maybe they are around.
Oh, huh, okay.
This also has some stuff tying to pre-New 52 stuff, whether or not that. It seems like this Maxwell Lord is actually from pre-New 52.
Now, why would they do that? Why would they tease that? Isn't that...
Because they even reference in the first one the Crisis on Infinite Earths where he kills Blue Beetle.
Yeah, but what do they gain out of that? I thought their whole point was to kind of clean out some
There's
of that
also
stuff.
Talk of the Watchmen stuff involved in this.
So this may be the follow-up to Rebirth people are looking for.
Yeah, and it's an interesting team, and they Maxwell Lord has his own agenda. That may or may not involve the Justice League down the road, but he definitely
he's the pre relaunch one. Wasn't that guy? He hadn't become a villain at that point, or no? I guess
sure he had. Yeah,
that was the
when
one
he
where he,
when
did.
He killed
that
Lizzle,
was just
yeah.
before
that was when he became
New 52
the villain
and stuff. Yeah,
but yeah, no, I really really enjoyed it. I thought Joshua Williamson has a really good handle on all the characters and puts them in pretty good situations, and the sort of. Kind of gotcha page towards the end is a pretty good twist, I thought. So I'm really enjoying it.
It's a weekly series, I believe.
Yes, yep. Yes, it
six
is.
Six issues.
Nick,
what is your backup pick?
And my backup pick is G.I. Joe number one.
What? None of us like G.I. Joe.
I mean, we only say
well, we do struggle through it a little bit. Like, there's interesting stuff going on over the years in the various G.I. Joe launches and miniseries and stuff. But, like, it's been hard for us to find our way back.
It is. Despite the fact that we end each podcast with Yo Joe, it has been a while since one of us has picked a G.I. Joe. So I'm curious.
I think the last time it was like the Chuckles G.I. Joe Cobra.
Yeah, the Cobra stuff, which is quite a while back. So I'm curious what struck you about this one.
So, I mean, this is written by Aubrey Sitterson and art by Giannis Milongiannis.
Yeah.
So no one I'd heard of
on
either thing. But this is part of the whole Hasbro connected universe. So you have ROM. You've got Micronauts, you've got Transformers, G.I. Joe, Mask.
What are the Visionaries, Nick?
I hope the Visionaries are going to come around.
Street Fighters should also be in this.
Street Fighter and G.I. Joe had their crossover years ago.
It's done.
Like
that was last year.
A year ago.
But this sort of opens up with a new squad that's been put together. Apparently Joe Colton was a dire wraith. They don't know for how long.
that was like the big thing,
that was
right?
The big thing. But now Scarlet is...
Although I thought they killed him. He was one?
He was.
Was he actually one?
ROM killed him. And that was the whole big deal.
They're like, hey, ROM, don't go killing G.I. Joes. And that got ROM on the thing. I actually thought that was a pretty clever idea, although it's kind of effed up to take the heart of G.I. Joe and reveal him to be a wraith.
Joe Colton was a dire wraith.
Yes.
Okay.
Randy's still wrapping his head around it.
Yep.
So if you watch the second G.I. Joe movie, Bruce Willis was a dire wraith the entire time.
Well, I always thought that.
No, but now Scarlet is the head of G.I. Joe, which is interesting.
That is interesting.
I don't know where Duke is. Who knows? I don't know what happened to him. No. They don't mention him. But this mainly focuses on Scarlet, Roadblock, Rock and Roll, Quick Kick, the daughter of Doc, which is kind of cool.
Docette.
They just call her Doc. It's... And then
sexist bastard.
Mrs. Doc.
And then Shipwreck.
No, that'd be his wife.
And then Shipwreck. And sort of fighting these Cybertronian advanced like ninjas that are part of the...
So we got Transformers.
There's even a major Transformer, a Decepticon that is part of the G.I. Joe squad now. Just bizarre. But I won't reveal who it is because it's kind of fun.
I hope it's what is it? What's the Megaplex or what's the Metroplex? I hope it's Metroplex, the living city.
He was an Autobot. This is a Decepticon.
Then I hope it's
It's an Insecticon.
Unicron.
In fact, the G.I. Joe now use the Nemesis, which I believe was the Decepticon's ship.
That's their big spaceship
as their base. Which is bizarre.
My head's detonating.
If you guys could see my face, it is not the face of someone who's pleased.
But there's some pretty interesting stuff. There's like...
And what you're finding it is like, this is like a fun mashup.
It is, but there's also some good character work involved. There's stuff, drama going on between Rock and Roll and Grand Slam.
It's an unusual... Grand Slam doesn't get a lot of screen time these days. What you're saying, though, is that there is more to this than just a, hey, let's just goof around and throw these together, that there's actually some depth.
Yeah, there's actually depth, there's character moments, there's an interesting plot dealing with sort of, you know, still Cybertronian incursions and other crazy, the Dreadnoughts make an appearance. Uh-huh. It has all sort of the classic G.I. Joe stuff that I like.
Can I just say, by the way, if we're blending these universes, I feel like the old... You remember Rumble and Frenzy?
They should hang out with the Dreadnoughts?
Yeah. They should absolutely hang out with the Dreadnoughts.
I agree with you.
I wouldn't be shocked if they did
that.
If
it doesn't happen by issue 2, I'm going to destroy all our copies.
Okay.
Interesting. But no, I thought it was fun.
So what you're saying is Joel Colton was a dire wraith?
Yes. Yes, and there are many other things I can tell you that might detonate your head even more.
I'm still spinning.
Surely, Randy, it doesn't seem weird to you that Rom the Space Knight used his neutralizer to destroy the founder of the G.I. Joe team. But he will be avenged by the Decepticon, who has joined the G.I. Joes.
But remind me, Grand Slam was like a laser expert,
yes,
wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Which makes sense now because he is actually retrofitting the Cybertronian lasers to become G.I. Joe weapons.
That makes a sort of sense. Grand Slam was the guy who, the toy at least, he came with the laser turret.
The big laser blaster.
Yeah.
But that was his primary specialty, I believe.
Yeah, which is a little bit weird, like all you do is fire a gun.
Secondary military specialty, fixing up Transformers.
I forget what it was.
In the classic Larry Hama stuff, right around issue like... 17 or 18, wherever it was where they invaded Washington, Cobra
yep.
did.
Yep.
That was Grand Slam is best known as the guy who beat the hell out of, was it Major Blood?
Yeah.
Blood had taken hostages on a bus, and yep. Grand Slam came in through the window and knocked the holy hell out of him.
Just like in that Beatles song.
Yes.
And the art is good. It's a little... crazy at times, but...
Well, I'm looking at it, and it looked a little... It had a little look of the...
Like anime.
Anime, yeah, absolutely.
Which kind of fits, but... I'm curious to see where number 2 takes us.
You've been seduced by the...
Okay.
The Joes, the Transformers, and the ROMs.
I
of the
have.
World.
All right, Dave?
Dave is picking the fourth issue, perhaps in a row that I've picked.
I think it might be
of Seven to Eternity. I think when we did our picks last week, it was one of my picks of the year.
Yeah, it was.
Even though it has only at this point hit 4 issues.
At that point, it only hit 3. What if this issue had sucked?
I was bracing for it.
You'd
honestly.
Have egg on your face.
Because here's the honest truth: the series, those 3 issues. I didn't know what the status quo of the series is.
Right.
I don't know if it'll really have a status quo per se, but it was clearly setting up what has begun this issue, which is to say the lead character, who is the son of the sort of a resistance guy to the evil, what do they call him, the Mud God, in this dark fantasy world that he controls everybody. He can see through the eyes and control the people who what do they do? They make a deal with him. Essentially, it's almost like a deal with the devil where they broker a deal. He provides all his protection and a good way of life, but they essentially become spies for him unknowingly, or knowingly, I should say. And this guy has been fighting all this possible misfortune. The lead character, he's dying of essentially cancer,
fantasy cancer,
and is just trying to take care of his family. But he goes to hear the deal that this guy offers, and while he's there in the third issue, he was like looked like maybe about to give in to it when suddenly these other resistance fighters showed up, the seven of the seven to eternity, or together that's what they became, and they are all like people who have sort of various magic abilities that are really cool, weird magic abilities that are not easily described, but would be totally cool in a video game.
Yeah.
And very different from normal stuff. There was a very brutal fight in which the bad guy's enforcer, the Piper, was made out to be like one of the scariest villains I've ever seen. But they did manage to sort of overcome them. And the series, as I believe, will now be, at least for a time, a sort of that sort of Lord of the Rings-ish long quest of they've captured the bad guy and they need to take him to some place to essentially exercise his power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like very far away, because if they were to just kill him, and they do have that ability right now, all the people that he's like sort of mind linked with would also die.
Ah.
So there's sort of dissent within their ranks, and also some camaraderie going on as they're traveling along. You get a little bit of that. I'm going to say Lord of the Rings ish, even though the setting here is not Lord of the Rings ish, but it's a little bit of that Lord of the Rings ish thing. You know, they're making camp along the way. They're talking to each other. Sometimes they're getting in arguments with each other. Sometimes they're bonding with each other. But there is also they have to let the bad guy out of his chains after a few days to eat, and he's like this master of manipulation. So as soon as he's out, he's kind of talking to them, and they're like, "We're watching you." And it's like it doesn't matter though. He's like already gets under their skin with just a few words.
He's like Hannibal Lecter.
He is like Hannibal Lecter. He is a scary, superpowered Hannibal Lecter of this weird fantasy world. There is some dark turns that come from what he says. Some actually major events occur even in this first issue of what I consider the major direction of the series. Some big, big stuff happens. Nick, you are also enjoying it?
Yeah, I am.
I'm not. You know, I know that Remender has a is known for doing dark material, and this is dark material.
It is.
I think in within this fantasy context, for some reason, it works better for me than I might if it was just like, I don't know, some his takes on other sort of adventure genres, because there is a tradition of dark fantasy for sure. But I'm continuing to find it very compelling. I do worry a little bit about whether it might become a little bit overwhelmingly bleak. But it's I really like the characters, and you know, kind of can't, you know, I am compelled to come back each month and see what on earth is going to happen, because it's very unpredictable.
We think this is sort of the breakout Image book of the year, right?
Yeah. I think so. It seems like customers have been really into it. Before it hit, we had more questions on the poster for this than anything else.
Yeah.
It does look like it, you know, on the surface, it does look like a traditional heroic fantasy, but beneath it, it reminded me more of something like Miyazaki's Princess Mononoke, where there's all these kind of like morally gray areas and this, you know, weird magic and stuff like that, and it's not going to be a predictable trope-driven fantasy.
Right.
So that's my secondary pick, Randy.
All right. My secondary pick is another book I've picked for a lot. This is a book that had fallen off it was my number one book for a while there, and it fell a little bit this year, and the book is Saga. Number 41 closes out the newest story, and I've realized that one of my issues with Saga is that as it goes on, I'm like, I like to have my books end at around 60.
Yeah.
And we're at issue 41, and I don't feel like we're leading toward an ending just yet.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm like, it's all interesting, and I like all the characters, I like all the interactions, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not getting that fresh jolt of this is so cool and so weird that I got from early on. That said, this finale of the story arc has some really great character moments, Some real surprising stuff. Some real great. Anytime they do anything with Sophie and Lion Cat, one of their better characters, it's got an emotional heft that even the main stuff doesn't. And there's some great scenes in here with that. So it ends on a strong note and reminds me why it is still on my like top 10 series list, even if it has fallen off the prestige number one spot. Mm-hmm. Also,
just out of curiosity, Randy, you said it doesn't feel quite like it's moving towards completion. Does it feel like it's taking little sort of side paths or focusing on like side characters?
No, I just there's a story. The story has definitely been sort of character driven, and I feel like the plot has been a little light.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's two people on the run. There's not like a definite destination.
And that was how it began. In issue one, that was the premise, and now it's still the premise. But they're but it's not like as soon as we get to blank, we're
done. Yeah,
we're done.
They're not trying to get somewhere. It's just sort of a on the run from forces that are not going away.
Right.
All right. Civil War II wraps this week before the end of the year. I'm surprised by that.
Yes. Congratulations to Marvel on completing their big project before 2017.
Yes, only 3 months late. Congratulations.
It's something.
She-Hulk has a new book called Hulk Number One, written by Mariko Tamaki, who wrote the Supergirl that Dave was very taken with.
Oh, right.
Artist Nico Leon, who I don't remember, I feel like I've seen him on maybe Miss Marvel.
Randy, don't you think there's a little bit of Josh Middleton in that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a very lawyery sort of slice of life kind of book. I was kind of surprised by it. There's not much superhero action in it, but it's an interesting first issue. Doctor Strange and Sorcerer Supreme number 3 gives us the introduction to another of the sorcerers. This one called Kushala. Another interesting one. Honestly, the biggest selling point for me, this is the artist who was on Spider-Woman, Javier Rodriguez, and it continues to be beautiful book. Savage number 2, which continues the origin of that character. We all like the first issue of that one quite a bit. Prowler number 3, which continues Prowler versus Electro, has really kind of nice painty artwork.
Hey, just real quick, what are the Prowler's powers or abilities?
He's a cat burglar who has, like, tech.
He's got, like, a tech-driven sort of suit?
Yep.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you what his powers are.
Can he fight?
A little. I don't know.
Okay.
Star Wars number 26 is... First of all, has the best C-3PO interrogation scene I've seen. And then also... does
C-3PO is interrogating or is being interrogated?
He's being interrogated.
Okay.
Also has a flashback to the start of a Yoda at his peak story with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan era.
Huh.
And the next issue is going to focus entirely on that, but it's interesting to see Yoda. It's more of Luke reading Ben's journals.
Okay, that's cool.
Rocket Raccoon gets a new number 1 by the writers been doing the Kingpin series. Serenity, New Power in the Verse, number 3. I haven't had a chance to read this yet, but I love the first two issues. Captain America, Steve Rogers, number 8. Again, haven't had a chance to read, but I've been liking. Black Widow, number 9. Detective Comics, number 947, which I believe finishes off the Victim Syndicate story. And Divinity 3, Commander Bloodshot, which is a one-shot about what Bloodshot's like in this crazy alternate world. We got a glimpse of that in the Stalinverse issue previously, which I like quite a bit. And I'm curious to see more of that Bloodshot. It's by Jeff Lemire, who's been doing the Bloodshot series.
And who writes 80 books.
All of which we love.
Yep.
Love is Love is the tribute book and support for those killed in the Pulse nightclub in Orlando in June. It's a who's who of writers and artists, including Jim Lee drawing Harry Potter for the first time.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like it mixes. Like, there are many different licenses that show that DC licenses and characters are drawn on in this. A lot of original stories and characters. And
these are all 1- and 2-page stories. There's some that are just pinups. There's some that are sort of quick stories.
Looking on the back, Patton Oswalt, P. Craig Russell, Mark Miller,
G. Willow Wilson,
Jason Aaron, Matt Wagner.
Yep. Big names.
Brian Bendis, Jonathan Hickman. I mean, it's a crazy who's who.
And it's $10 for a trade. It's a good deal, and money goes to a good cause. Worth a look. Sam and Mystery Theater Volume 2 comes out. This collects the Tarantula, and I forget what the other one is, but it's a couple. There's this sort of Depression era pulp book is one of my favorite comics.
Yeah, everybody should.
And I'm
much
glad to
that.
Finally have that. Nighthawk, which was one of my favorite miniseries of the year,
finally gets collected.
And that is my list for the week.
I think
my list for the year.
Most of the stuff. I just wanted to mention that the second issue of the new Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider is out. And I haven't read it yet, but I did enjoy the first issue, so I'm looking forward to that. And the second issue of AD, or After Death, the breakout from Image, oversized prestige format, whatever this is, by Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire, super powerhouse team.
Yeah.
We sold out of the first issue, and then
we got it back in. We have it.
It came back in, but I mean, like, but I, not so much to say that it's sold out and that's bad, but it's sold out because people loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that issue's back, and now you have a second issue, and it's a mixture of prose and comics, so you get a lot for your money on this. It is a dense read with beautiful art that looks really cool in the oversized format from Jeff Lemire. Nick, you got any other?
Yeah, I've got a few. The final issue of this first story arc of All-Star Batman.
Right.
The newest issue of Uncanny Avengers that team was going up against Red Skull again. Third issue of Teen Titans. First issue of Rocket Raccoon. Third issue of Infamous Iron Man.
We'll see. Real quick, the various Guardians who have solo books right now are Rocket,
Gamora, Star-Lord.
Okay.
And Drax have one, but I think it's already been canceled.
Okay.
Yes.
So those three.
And then the third issue of Great Lakes Avengers.
Cool. All right. That about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with probably a longer podcast.
Right. Hopefully back to normal.
Yep.
We'll see.
But until that time, everybody have a Merry New Year. Happy New Year.
You have a happy new year.
Super great new year. Yeah. Fantastic new year. Best new year ever.
You know what I hope they have?
What's that?
A smashing new year.
Have a smashing new year. And until that time,
Yo-Jo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.